You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice. All right, it's another edition of Positive Cynicism. It's we're recording this one kind of late and push for time, so I'm going to skip the cold open. You know the drill. JitteryMonkey.com. Check out all the shows. Positive Cynicism, which is my show, which is the one you should be listening to because you're listening to it right now. But then you also have My 1-2-3 Cents, Nerd United, and Five Heart Podcast. Listen to them all. Go to JitteryMonkey.com. Hit the shop button. Buy a t-shirt. Because summer's coming, and these are awesome summer t-shirts that you should be wearing. I am joined by Eric Bennett. He's here once a month to discuss pop culture and film. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks for having me again. Can't wait to talk about franchises.
Yes, we are going to get into the multiverse, which seems to be the big thing, all because Marvel hit upon a good idea, and one that they executed very well over 10 years and 22 movies, which I think is a bit of an overkill, but I give them credit for actually tying together a somewhat coherent and few plot holes along the way.
Yeah.
So let's start. Obviously, by the time this has come out, if you haven't seen Endgame, you probably aren't that interested in seeing it. You're not rushing out, and so there may be some spoilers here. I don't know what we're going to discuss, but if you haven't seen Endgame and you're planning on it, maybe turn the podcast off, come back when you have seen it. Otherwise, Eric, let's just real quick, because Endgame is the end sort of the Marvel universe, what were your thoughts? I know you're a big Marvel fan.
Yep, been collecting comics since the 70s. I guess back then I was just getting them from my mom and reading them. But then I put some of them in boxes. I have a rather large collection. So this kind of serialized entertainment and this movie was interesting. Did we talk about this movie?
We have not talked about it.
No. I would love to have your take, obviously, because you're more objective about it. And I'm pretty close to some of this material. It was a hard movie to enjoy. And again, we're going to have spoilers in this. So if you haven't seen this in 17, 20 days, shame on you. So I think it was a little bit melancholy because it's the end of a lot of my favorite characters continuing, at least as leading their respective trilogies. So there's a little bit of a down feeling because even though our heroes by large win this contest with Thanos, we're saying goodbye to two of my favorites. Again, spoilers, Iron Man, Captain America, in major ways. You know, one dies, one retires in the sunset, so to speak. So It's frequently rousing, but it's also very emotional, very draining because of there's a lot going on. And then I'm just left going, well, where do they go from here? Probably more Black Panther, more Captain Marvel, which we can talk more about Marvel's future. But Endgame itself, I thought the first time I was stressed out watching it, and I can't say I enjoyed all of it. I enjoyed the final act because there's a lot of action and there's some very satisfying moments. And the second time, which I would really recommend to the hardcore MCU fans, I really loved it the second time because all that nervousness and anticipation and expectation went away, and I just saw it as, this is so cliche, I'm gonna say it, like, this was a love letter to all the people, especially Robert Downey Jr., because he was really, it was a big deal for him in this movie, and I think it even ends with him pounding metal at the end of the credits. So this whole thing was just a kind of a relief in a way, because this thing had been going on for a long time, but it was also sad to see these characters go. So it wasn't one of those movies I was really happy about, but I found it satisfying and really enjoyable the second time. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that it was a good send-off, a good finale. I don't think it needed to be 3 hours long. I think you could have trimmed the first hour down by about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I saw this back home in the Midwest, and it was probably the most lackluster screening because other than when Captain America gets Thor's hammer, one guy went like, ooh. But other than that, there was reaction to nothing. Like, no one cheered. No, it was just a normal. You could have been watching, I don't know, like a Helen Mirren period piece about the Queen and gotten the same reaction.
Is that typical for a Midwest
crowd? I have no idea. I mean, I mean,
you grew up there, right?
I mean, I grew up there, but I mean, when I saw like midnight screenings of X-Men,
yeah,
I remember that was, and even midnight screening of Snakes on a Plane, which only had like 30 people, at least people were into it. But yeah, this was a new experience for me. And I kept thinking during the movie, I'm like, oh, had I gone to see it with you and the group of people here, or even had I seen it at any screening out here, I think it would have been much more. And I talked to a friend who saw, because I went to a 7:45 screening,
mm-hmm.
and my friend went to the 9:20 screening at the same theater, and she said that they had people cheering in her screening. So I just got the...
Yeah, and it really makes a big deal because that's a long movie. It takes a lot of energy. It's not frequently entertaining, but I saw it the first time at the Grove, which is a shopping center and kind of a fancy Fairfax area of Los Angeles, and I don't really like to go there, and the crowd was pretty good, not great, and then of course, the fanboy and me came out. I saw it at El Capitan, which is Disney's run theater, which is right in the heart of Hollywood for our listeners. And it was one of the top 10 experiences of a movie I've ever been to. So not only did I have the second viewing where I was more relaxed, but then I had people screaming and crying and sniffling. And it really augments your experience. And that's why, and you know this, of course, knowing me, that I like to go opening weekend. And I like to find the movie palaces because the movie palaces in Los Angeles average between 1,000 and 1,500 is about four or five of them. And those are the ones I go to. If I'm going to spend the money, I want the crowd. So it doesn't surprise me a little bit that your crowd was not really reacting. And I think that is going to impact your experience. It's such a long movie that you could use that pickup. Because I think the directors did a good job building up some moments. So they were there.
Yeah. Well, I actually should clarify. There was one other person who was somewhat excited about the film, and that was the six-month-old baby that somebody brought to the film, who whenever there was not action on the screen and it was all talky, was not happy and would cry. And of course the person with the baby did not think that this was inappropriate or should, you know, leave the theater to quiet the kid down and come back. So
yeah, that's a Thanos movie. You gotta snap that kid out of there.
Yeah. But
no death, just maybe teleportation. Just get the baby out of there.
No, overall, like I said, I enjoyed it. Fitting ending. There are a lot of nitpicks that I have with the mm-hmm. movie, but I think my biggest one, and this will go back to our conversation from last month about overrated movies, you could have taken Captain Marvel out of this film, not killed off Scarlet Witch in Infinity War, and had, with the exception of, I guess, saving Tony in space, Scarlet Witch could have been what Captain Marvel was in this movie. Like, you could have just used her to fight Thanos.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of Captain Marvel either because she comes in this movie and then she goes away because there's other worlds that have been snapped and they demand her attention. But she's really just a plot device to bail. And I like the fact that all the heroes chip in and bail each other out in these moments. Obviously, there's a lot going on in this movie. Captain Marvel is not my favorite. She's just another thing that they threw in there that wasn't the greatest thing. Like, even the Guardians were barely in there, which kind of bothered me. So there's a lot of stuff I could nitpick about, and even some stuff that isn't so nitpicky, but I look at it like the final episode of Seinfeld, and we're probably not going to talk extensively about Game of Thrones, but these things don't resolve themselves sometimes very satisfying for when you have what could potentially be a $3 billion movie. There's going to be lots of fans going, I would have done this, I would have done that. And I realized I had some problems here and there. But this is a wrap-up to 10-plus years, and I'm like, this is about as good as they're going to do because they can't please everybody.
Very true, very true. Now, let's break this down because as we are here to discuss cinematic universes,
mm-hmm.
Marvel, again, has created this template that a lot of other studios and film properties are starting to mimic in a way, and that is making films that can stand alone on their own, but also tie into a larger story or a larger arc. We've seen DC and Warner Brothers try to jump on without the patience with Justice League, and even then, the latest Aquaman and Shazam don't really fit into the same. They're in the same universe, but they're not telling a overall story.
Yeah.
So I guess let's start with Marvel. And when Marvel started this cinematic universe, did you think they would be able to pull it off to the degree that they did?
Not in the beginning, because really, superhero movies were kind of hit and miss until 2008. Iron Man, which everyone knows, kind of changed the game, and Marvel bet everything on it, and it hit, which created that. And I didn't know how many they were going to make. As a fan, I was just hoping they'd make one a year, and then it started. They were becoming so successful. I remember some years there might have been two or three, maybe even four of them. And then I remember it was about five or six movies in. I was like, they can't miss. And I realized there was something special going on, but I never could have predicted it. As far as like the Thanos thing, I always thought that took too long. 20-something movies to talk about one villain, it makes it epic, but it'd be like a year before you'd see a stone, and then it'd be casually mentioned or it'd be in an Easter egg scene. So I'm not sure the tie-in of that was great. I think you could have just brought Thanos in at any moment and just had him be a bad guy. Because there wasn't a huge emotional attachment to these stones. I had to research what the stones were before I even saw the first Infinity War. So I wasn't that attached to the idea of them. I thought Thanos was just an awesome villain. So if Thanos would have shown up and just had a glove on, I would have been perfectly fine with whatever they said the glove was doing. It was just threatening my heroes. But no, to answer your question, I had no idea how that they were going to be able to pull this off. I mean, this is something they did in the comic books with Secret Wars, and the Avengers was kind of an off and on comic. So they have done these tie-ins before, but typically Marvel has, even in their own comic books, they have a run of comics that exist on their own. And the tie-ins are just kind of cheap ways for them to get all the people interested in a character they may not have heard of before. So they go, hey, you like Hulk? Well, guess who Hulk's with? So it was always kind of a gimmick to me. And the Russo Brothers did such a good job of making it something you care about and not so much a gimmick, that once I saw these team-ups, like the Guardians were teaming up and the X-Men had teamed up in a few successful movies, it was only a matter of time where they'd expand it and they could... the Russo Brothers always talked about teaming up, you know, one person with another you wouldn't expect. And they did a good job with that. So I couldn't have seen it coming, but I like what they did with it.
Now, I guess in that same regard, do you think we needed, you know, three Iron Mans, three Thors, three Captain Americas, or as you said, they could have brought in Thanos earlier. So if you would have just done an introductory film and then did the Avengers, would that have worked as well? Or do you think we needed, because to me, 22 movies in 10 years is too long to tell a story. Like, it was good for this one time, but whatever they're going to do next, if it's going to take another 10 years, at least for me, I'm probably not going to care like I did with this one.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that goes somewhat to like superhero or franchise burnout. I think we've talked about this before. I don't get burned out on these things because I'm reading a graphic novel that's 600 pages long. So I'm constantly absorbing stuff from the superhero genre and graphic novel genre. So for me, if you mentioned that we got 22 movies in 10 years, it's two a year. It's about 4 to 5, 6 hours of my time a year. I said this before about Star Wars. I don't really view that as a heavy time investment. You know, you got people watching Game of Thrones, it's 70, 80 hours long. I'm not sure all the Marvel movies even add up to that. They might add up to 40 or 50. So people are, that's one show. That's the only one show. So I think we're getting into this, and that this whole thing about this never-ending storyline, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think answering your question about some of the Iron Mans and Captain Americas and some of the other ones, I think they could have trimmed some of the fat. But because these movies are making so much money, the studios are never going to say no. Like, are you going to say no to Josh Whedon for Avengers Age of Ultron, which I didn't think was a very good movie, and it made $1 billion? I mean, you're not going to say no to it, so.
Yeah, I think for me it's the, like, by the time we got into Infinity War and Endgame, there was so much that I had forgotten about from the previous, because I don't go back and rewatch them. And so, like, even watching Captain Marvel when they're talking about the Tesseract or
whatever it's
called, I'm like, oh yeah, what is that thing again? What? Mm-hmm. So I think in that regard, a shorter time frame is probably better for people with no memory, much like myself. But again, I will give Marvel credit for being able to tie in this story and having, you know, we sit here and we've talked about Last Jedi, and I look at the new Star Wars trilogy, which is just three films, which doesn't have a cohesive storyline between two films, and you look at Marvel putting 22 movies together to tell a story.
Yeah, and that was all done, I think we talked about this before, but like Disney acquired it, and to cover their investment, they kind of cranked them out too fast without a... Like JJ was saying that him and Ryan had a very brief handoff. Like it was like, this is the theme, and then Ryan's like, okay, fine, I'll do something different. Yeah. And now JJ has to pick up the pieces from Last Jedi, so it's been a little uneven there, but I think we're entering a new realm of where they realize, I think they're conditioning the audience, and it's been there for a while with the superhero genre, but with binge watching, people aren't interested in saying goodbye to the characters anymore. We used to find this very profound when we would get, you know, one movie that we liked in the original Star Wars trilogy, or at least 4, 5, 6, we were hanging on everything as kids. And if you would ask me if I would have wanted 7, 8, 9, I would have said sure. At the time, they didn't do it. They did it just recently. So we're entering something now where the studios have calculated how much they can draw the interest, and they're just going to beat it into us until we walk away from it. And since we're not walking away from it, it's going to continue. Is that a good thing? I think if the quality is there, it is. I know you're not a huge fan of the new Star Wars, so, and you know, so.
I am curious to see episode 9, just to see if they can actually make a logical conclusion to it. But yeah, I will be there opening night, most likely, but it's more out of curiosity than fandom. But, I mean, you make a good point where I think, you know, growing up, yes, we always had sequels, and we had other films that, didn't have so much a universe, but there were films that just kind of ended. Like, okay, this is the end of these characters. Now you move on to something else. And now with streaming television being what it is, where, you know, Marvel is doing a Loki show, a Scarlet Witch, a Hawkeye. They've done Daredevil, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You have all these elements where I guess you can say that television is kind of like the new, it's not the new, but it's like a serial book where, you know, like Agatha Christie had her Poirot, you know, Detective Poirot books. I'm trying to think of other ones character Sam Spade, all these characters, you would just get new books. And even, I guess, going back to the early days of cinema where you had the serials, where you had the Flash Gordons, you had Lone Ranger. Are we kind of getting into that type of entertainment where, because they know these films are successful and we have these characters that people love, like, you know, I think 10 years ago, 12 years ago, if you would have said, oh, they're going to make an Iron Man movie with Robert Downey Jr., there's probably little interest. But then when you see it and you see how well he did and how well they did the first movie, you create this character that people want to see more of. So even though I am not the target audience because I do want something different, there are enough people out there that say, no, keep giving us these characters. And like you said, it's comic book based. And if comic books can be going on for 50 years, then why not movies?
Yeah, I think that is a very important thing to stress, whether you really like them or not, is that, and a lot of people are not a big fan, like some guys at work can't stand these things that I talk to. But these things have been around, like you said, 40, 50, 60, Superman, maybe... I don't know. What is it? 80 years? Who knows? But so these characters never die off. So they're going to keep telling those stories. And I think we grew up in the time where movies were kind of like you told a story in three acts and it was over. And we have obviously transformed. Now the danger would be obviously the quality is not there. And it's just a money move. Like they split Hunger Games into two movies and Harry Potter into two movies. Those movies really suffered being split like that. I would even argue Endgame suffers by the fact that we're seeing Thanos again and they're fighting him again. Maybe Infinity War should have just been 3 hours and that would have been the end of it. Like have one epic, you know, throwdown and then throw in some time travel. Who knows? Make it 3.5 hours. Who knows? But I think we're moving in some new territory and the danger is that the quality won't be there or they'll just keep putting out material and then burning you out on your favorite characters. That's what I'm a little bit worried about is if I see my 50th Marvel film, am I going to be so sick of seeing the second or third Iron Man? We're probably on our fourth Spider-Man at this point. It does become a little overkill.
Yeah, I think that depends on the character. Plus, you know, hopefully they will spread out the character. Like, not rebooting Iron Man or Captain America quickly and give you some time off to kind of breathe. And yeah. I know I've read the next phase is it the Eternals or the Immortals that they're?
I think it's the Eternals.
Eternals and yeah. some Asian superhero that I'm not going to try to butcher the name that I can't remember.
I wonder if it's, yeah, I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, but then they also will have Black Panther, Guardians,
more Captain Marvel.
So is it going to be a case where, because I think that, to me, that was part of the problem with the Star Wars trilogy is like they're cranking them out so fast and they're not giving enough breather or enough variation.
Yeah.
And so if you keep rehashing the same one, whereas if you would take a different character and build, you know, that movie for 1 year and then the next year you get a different one. Again, it goes back to, are they telling one giant story or is it going to just be individual stories that maybe might tie in later on?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Marvel looks at phase four or whatever they're in now as like all these things have to tie together. I'm guessing they're going to pump the brakes on that. And you know, obviously Disney acquiring Fox, we're going to have an X-Men, you know, X-Men stuff coming up. We're going to have Fantastic Four coming up. So it's just going to, I know Spielberg predicted that superhero movies would go the way of the Western. He said that famously some time ago, and I'm not seeing it. I'm thinking this is here to stay because it's that old 8 to 80 thing. Like, it's working on old fans and it's working on young fans. And think of all the fans that, and of course I go, and there's lots of kids at these movies. They're going to be lifelong fans. So this is, we haven't even seen this generation since 2008 Iron Man, mind you. What about all those kids that are getting older and when they raise their kids? I think Marvel has just laid the seeds down for, like, it'll be interesting to see the genre in about 10 years. It might be a $4 billion movie. I think we're heading that direction. Whether that's a good thing or not depends on if you can take any more of it.
Yeah. Now, when I started researching this topic, obviously I thought Marvel just, based on not really thinking to begin with, thought Marvel had kind of created this cinematic universe idea. I forgot that technically, and this is probably not the first one either, but Kevin Smith had done this with Clerk, with his View Askew universe, which is Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, where they just had a reference to something that happened or a character from another movie, but it wasn't necessarily a tie-in. If you didn't see the previous movie, you're not going to miss out on something. Again, DC seems to be going that way with their superhero movies. Do you think that is a better way to go now that we are past the Marvel Infinity War phase? Do you think it is a better thing to just be like, okay, these are shared universes, and if you want to cross over one character for a scene or something, but not necessarily build up to that bigger story? What is your feeling on, do you want I guess something basic or something more elaborate?
Well, I think Marvel's done a good job. Keep going back to Marvel here, but they're kind of the standard that if you take a lot of their movies individually, they're not strictly tie-ins. Like, so some of their movies are almost entirely unique, and then there's like an Easter egg at the end. So 99% of it is its own thing. DC, I know, has walked back. I don't know if it's the president. There's a lot of turmoil and firings over there, or quitting. So they're saying that they're pumping the brakes on the universe idea because they could not get it right. We talked about this before. They couldn't establish some of their own movies very well. The fans were kind of split on them. I think DC is the real unmined franchise because they have all these brilliant characters and cool stuff, and they just haven't really pulled it off very well. So if they can get those right, I would say don't do the team-ups until way down the line and you've earned it. So, and I think their new leadership recognizes that, and they said, we're not doing universe movies right now. We're not doing world building, which is, I think, is what you're referring to.
Right. And I'm going to interject real quick because a topic that I don't think I've talked with you about, I've talked to someone else that I will bring up now to kind of talk about. DC has probably the most iconic superheroes, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. Like, I think those are characters that everybody knows or the majority of people know, whereas Marvel, when they did Iron Man, Guardians, even Thor, like, they weren't that well known. Do you think that's a hindrance to DC because people have this preconceived opinion, or because of the success of the Christopher Reeve movies, the, you know, even the Tim Burton Batman movie, like then the TV show, like they had a preconceived opinion, whereas Marvel was kind of given free rein to create a quote unquote new character that the audience hadn't seen before.
Yeah, what Marvel did is, and we've talked about this a little bit, is that they've earned this cachet. So Iron Man was a big risk. I think people really need to research that or remember that, and that Iron Man was not a sure hit. So Spider-Man's were a sure hit, and that's really kind of what they had. And then they had X-Men with Fox, but Marvel was betting everything on Iron Man, but basically because of Robert Downey Jr. And DC has the opposite thing, where they have all the characters with the cachet, but then their movies are floundering here and there. Most of the critics don't like them. The DC fans that I know, they're just too forgiving with these movies, and I'm glad that they shook up the leadership there. And if anything, I think DC movies are moving in Marvel's direction, as far as they seem to start looking like Marvel movies. I'm not sure if that's a great thing, but they're trying to get quality control. So again, DC is this untapped resource, but they're going to have to look at Marvel until they can establish and stay on an even course, because they're too rocky right now with their quality control. I saw Aquaman. I think we may have talked about it. I was like, that movie made a lot of money. That was not a good movie. And I saw Shazam. That is one of the most forgettable. And this is a character that's a goofy version of Superman, of course. But they can't get their serious characters right. And then they're doing these goofy takes on the other characters, which are less serious and better. But they're totally disposable. And only Wonder Woman, to me, has come out of this pack as being something that they should just try to make more of that. It's easier said than done.
Yeah. As I told you a few weeks ago, I think Teen Titans Go is probably the best DC movie. So if you have not seen Teen Titans Go to the movies, I highly recommend it.
And I'm going to watch it.
And that's something that I don't know if it could be done live action and still had the same humor and heart, I guess.
Yeah, it would have cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make that movie. And again, you haven't earned the Teen Titans.
And I had no, I mean, other than Robin, I know none of the characters in Teen Titans. So I think that's also better. It's just a fresh. So maybe DC needs to look into their archives and find out which minor league characters they can pull out. And I'm still waiting on a Plastic Man movie, though. I don't know who owns him, but
I've actually heard of that in development. I don't know if I've heard different names attached, and it's going to be a total comedy or whatever. But I was going to say, put in one thing in favor of the DC and Marvel mold, maybe even Star Wars as well, in that these movies, I think, and I've criticized some of them, I just criticize Aquaman, but they're really aimed at children, and so are some of the Star Wars movies. So as much as we may be getting burned out, or like, it is kind of nice that there's a film out there that's a little inspirational or aspirational, where you can take your niece or nephew to. And I've talked to my niece and nephew about these movies. I like that my mom knows about some of the characters. She likes the new Star Wars movies quite a bit. So I'm liking that this has a mainstream family kind of appeal. And there's a place for that. So we can all get together a couple times a year and enjoy these things. I think people are being a little too critical of this genre, because this, and Marvel's really brought it to some good heights, but these things are not like Oscar winning, you know, dramatic. You know, they're meant to have a broad appeal all the way to China and beyond. So take that into account when you watch these movies, that they're not supposed to be Academy Award winning, you know, masterpieces.
Right. Now, the next cinematic universe that's coming to the theaters very quickly, very soon, as in regards to when we record this, is one that I know you're a big fan of.
Oh, boy. Don't say it. I'm gonna freak out when you say the name.
And it's the Godzilla.
Oh, my boy.
Franchise, which, you know,
give it to me.
I will still say, if you go back and watch the teaser trailers for the Matthew Broderick version, those are some of the best teasers, and they will still make you want to go and watch that movie, and then hopefully you remember how bad that movie is before seeing it. But, you know, was it 2014 when the last Godzilla movie came out? And then a couple years later, they did Kong Skull Island.
Yep.
And at the end of that movie, they had a tie-in with all these pictures of Godzilla.
I'm getting a little excited just thinking of that Easter egg at the end of the movie.
Creature. So now they're
all the hieroglyphics or whatever.
Yeah. So now they're building up this Godzilla universe, which will eventually lead to Kong versus Godzilla. Mm. And I have to say, you know, you mentioned it before we started recording. This summer, summer of 2019, I think Godzilla is probably my most anticipated film.
Oh, it is for me. I mean, we're here in the middle of May almost, and it's May 31st, and we plan on going that weekend. Some of the listeners out there may have seen some of the social media posts of the marketing department for Legendary and Warner Brothers, and they have Godzilla coming out of this very famous theater called the Arclight Cinerama Dome. Well, it's the Cinerama Dome. Arclight owns the facility. But Godzilla's popping out of this big dome where there's this giant old movie theater. It's like 40-something years old. But I am with you. This is... I think I liked Endgame. I thought it was good. It wasn't great. Of course, I'm always nervous and sky-high on Star Wars films. But Godzilla might be my number one right now. And it's not because it's just 2 weeks away. Because Godzilla is a huge deal. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but I know Chad here knows that I grew up as a kid worshiping Godzilla since the 1954 version. And I believe it's the longest running franchise. People will argue based on what, you know, how many you make and if you evoke something that was a little bit older. But Godzilla is largely considered the oldest running franchise in history. Because this has been going a movie or two a year now since 1954. So this is my number one by a mile, and it's got all my favorite monsters in. I just hope it sticks with the American audience. So what do you think? How do you think that... It's not tracking extremely high, which I'm a little bit worried about. Still, tickets are very easy to get. What do you? How do you think the audience is going to respond to a WWE showdown, which is what they're calling it?
Yeah. I think part of the lack of excitement or anticipation is based on the 2014 movie, which didn't have enough Godzilla.
No, about 10 minutes worth, yeah.
Yeah, but then hopefully... If people saw Skull Island, that was pretty much wall-to-wall action.
It's fun.
And it was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was well done. Much better than the Peter Jackson King Kong movie, which...
Snooze fast.
Yeah. I think Godzilla may not open to the expectation that it is, but I think word of mouth hopefully will propel it to give it some legs. Because I think if, unless they've just put all the action scenes in the trailer... it looks like a movie that, one, has a story behind it, unlike, say, Pacific Rim, which I was not a fan of.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, you've got, you know, a cast of really talented and popular actors. And then I don't know how many monsters are going to be fighting in this movie, but I think they say, what, there's 28 altogether? But I hope they don't throw all 28 in this one film.
Yeah, let's just show a couple shots. I saw a couple in the trailer but then supposedly Toho only licenses the major ones. I think they're lying about that. I think there's more of them. But, that will be official ones.
Yeah, and then I'm just curious to see how we get to Godzilla versus King Kong. And again, I think this is going to be just a fun summertime action movie.
Oh yeah, I mean Godzilla. It's weird. I was just asked. By someone last week, like why I've been asked this a bunch of times, like why I love Godzilla, and again I saw it when I was a little kid, but there's something special about that character. I get why American audiences haven't always. The Matthew Broderick movie was a disaster. 2014 one was a little bit of was dull. I actually really enjoyed it. I just watched it, but I'm pretty biased, so I'm just waiting and waiting for him. But I should not have had to wait that long for him. So I'm not sure if he's going to stick. That's my biggest fear, is that I think it will do pretty average to below average here, like you say. But the global market is going to be really good for this movie because China is such an emerging... You know, I got to stop using that word. China, the market's ridiculous over there now. I mean, look at what Endgame's doing in China. And I think a lot of markets overseas love Godzilla, and it's going to be a big deal. And I love that they've announced another one. So if it only... I always get worried about how many they're going to make. So, like, we have this one. We know we have Kong versus Godzilla, and I'm hoping this is the 1-2 punch to get the franchise back to where it's a regular thing, because I much rather see Godzilla movies than Marvel movies. Because I love, and Godzilla of course doesn't speak, but everything about Godzilla, the way that if it, and I encourage the listeners to do this, when you watch a Godzilla movie, pay attention to his body language, because that was a big deal when the man was in the rubber suit. There's lots of funny things, there's lots of scary things. Especially if you're a kid, I know it seems dopey now. But when you watch the new one, who's very realistic, there's a way he opens up his nose, and there's a lot of predator and alpha behavior. And I really like all these little touches they're putting in it, and all the stuff in the trailer. I'm going to go on for 10 minutes now. I want to get back to you, but I'll just say this movie is so anticipated because of the other monsters in it, not just Godzilla.
So that was going to be my next question, is what cinematic universe then do, with the exception of Kong versus Godzilla, what can they do as a franchise to tie, to make this cinematic universe? Because how much destruction can the Earth take at the hands of these monsters?
Well, the good thing about Godzilla is that there's so many, much like Marvel, there's so much good lore there in terms of, well, I wouldn't use lore in the sense of just like great stories, but there's all these great monsters that Godzilla can keep fighting with. So if, just imagine you're a kid and how much fun any of these movies would have, you know, have been when you're a kid, and these Rock'em Sock'em robots are, I wonder what would happen if this what Marvel does, if this character fights this character, Batman versus Superman. This is, I think, could really be appealing to a younger audience. I think they're going to have a little bit of trouble like pumping out one a year. I heard Toho just open up a Santa Monica office. So I think they're very serious about making a kaiju-verse, a monster-verse. But I think we have a modest hit in Godzilla. We had a unexpected, pretty awesome movie that made some money in Skull Island. These are not runaway hits. I think this movie will probably do the best out of the three. It will get it back on track. This is my hope. And I think that perfect, I like the way they're pacing this. I think Godzilla versus Kong will send it over the top. And then I hope we get one every couple of years.
But would you do, like the old, the movies that I remember as a kid were like Godzilla versus Mothra versus
Mechagodzilla.
Would you do those, or would you give the, I guess, the villain kaiju their own film?
Oh, wow. That, I don't know if they can do that. I don't know how many. The real problem with Godzilla and some of these, he has the most awesome villains and allies and sometimes and adversaries. They're sometimes the same thing. Like Rodan, for example. That, I don't know if there's enough there because the audiences aren't conditioned enough. They don't know who these are. That's what I'm worried about this new movie is, like, do you know who Ghidorah is? Like, do you know who Ghidorah is? You know, the three-headed dragon. Do you know Rodan very well?
No, I know the names, but I couldn't.
Yeah. Most people say, oh, that's cool. It's a pterodon that flies. And that's, wait, that's a moth? It's a larva? What? So I'm a little bit concerned that we, as an American audience, we're not as familiar with these characters. So I think these are going to have to be, word of mouth is going to be a big deal. And I think it would be pretty optimistic to think that they're going to make a standalone villain. Because, again, they don't talk. They don't have lines. I'm just kind of, I think we're playing with house money now. I was just so happy because this movie, this date got pushed back. And I think it got pushed up, but it got pushed back a year. It's been 5 years since we've got a Godzilla movie. This is not good if you're a fan. And Star Wars is going through its little bumps. Yeah. So, as a fan of serialized entertainment, these things specifically, I don't want to get too greedy. I'm just so happy we have this one coming out. And I really hope it's as good as it looks.
What if we got Baby Godzilla?
Oh, man. Yeah. No thanks. No thanks.
All right.
Don't make it jokey.
Yeah. The last one that we're going to touch on is, as we've mentioned it a few times, but it's Star Wars, which so far has not had a necessarily an extended universe, other than if you count Solo, which kind of introduced some new characters that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, they're kind of doing it. They're kind of going back and forth and stuff like that. Back and forth.
But now, after The Rise of Skywalker, Episode 9, I believe the showrunners or creators of Game of Thrones are supposed to be doing a trilogy on Disney Plus, the new Disney streaming service launching in November. Jon Favreau is doing the Mandalorian series.
Cannot wait.
Ryan Johnson is still threatening to do a trilogy. So
I actually have an update on that. And I believe this is going to be substantiated in the next couple of weeks. I'm hearing that he's out.
He's out?
I have read, because obviously there's a very loud minority. I wouldn't say half the fans, but there's a very fractured fan base out there. We all know what, you know, they say about Ryan Johnson. It's toxic to the brand. As much as I love Last Jedi and Ryan Johnson's efforts, I think that trilogy is squashed, because, you know, they mentioned three movies that were spaced out as a single trilogy. We know that's the Game of Thrones guys. Yeah. That's not Ryan Johnson. Ryan Johnson started, I believe, earlier than those other guys. Yeah. Where does his movie fit into Lucasfilm? They didn't announce his movie. So what does that mean? I think he's bows out.
Okay.
So thank you, trolls.
Are you excited for, because for me, as a Star Wars fan, I think now is, you know, when they announced that they're going to do standalone films and they were doing Young Solo and they talked about a Yoda movie and an Obi-Wan movie. And
Obi-Wan, yeah.
And all these, and I'm like, I don't need to see their prequels or their, you know, their stories. I want to see, like, give me a Bounty Hunter movie. Give me a Jabba's Palace movie. Give me something, give me the Old Republic. Give me something that is tangentially connected, but not directly.
Yeah, so you're not taking those superstars out and going, well, here's when they were younger.
Yeah.
Did you like Solo?
I love Solo.
But then you're saying you don't want more of that going forward.
I don't want it, and this is what I think
hurts. There's young Chewie, young Solo.
What I think hurt Solo, besides the backlash from Last Jedi, is you have an iconic character played by an iconic actor, and you're giving us the backstory of him that I don't think a lot of fans wanted. But, I mean, I think I can't pronounce the actor's name. I think
Alden
he did
Alden Ehrenreich?
Something like that. But I think he did a great job emulating the Han Solo character. And I thought that story was really good. And I want more. I actually do want to see the next stage.
I do too. I'm so disappointed. That's run its course.
But I don't need to see Obi-Wan between episode 3 and episode 4.
I do, because I think Ewan McGregor is an awesome Obi-Wan. When I was at the, for the people listening here, I was just at the Chicago Star Wars Celebration. There's a lot of people that kind of love his take on it. But I agree with you. I think the danger of saying, well, we're not going to make a Star Wars movie unless it's someone you've heard of before. That can go so south. I mean, again, look at the backlash, and Solo created some of its own backlash. Like, what are you doing? This is Harrison Ford's role. What do you mean you're making a Boba Fett movie? Boba Fett didn't even really talk that much. And the danger is if you keep going back to the past, you don't ever push the story forward. So you mentioned the Old Republic. I think that's what the Game of Thrones guys were working on, or Rian Johnson. So that is the rumor. But I agree. I think that fresh start is probably better at this point. Unless, in my opinion, you can get Ewan McGregor. But to make a random Boba Fett movie, who do you get? I mean, I know the fans really want to see it.
Well, and that's where I'm curious with the Mandalorian series, because it's not, and I didn't know this until recently, it's not Boba Fett. I thought it was going to be a Boba Fett. You know, he was going to be the Mandalorian, but it's just another.
It's one of that race of mercenaries.
Yeah, and so I'm curious to know more about them.
Oh, I'm so in on that. That's November 12th. I sound like I work for Disney, but November 12th, I will be picking up a subscription. We'll see how long it lasts, but that sounds very exciting, and I like the idea that they're doing it in TV as well, because Star Wars has done some of these animated things, and they're kind of like too kiddie for me. Mandalorian looks really, there's a lot of Easter eggs in it, which is pretty cool. So I kind of like that it's not Boba Fett, it's something fresh in terms of a new character we haven't heard of. But I think the new Star Wars movies, interesting to see if they stand on their own. Like, does the one that the Game of Thrones guys come up with, does that stick like the Skywalker ones did? And people are still spit on those ones too. So, like, Star Wars is on a little bit of shaky ground. And when I say shaky ground, I still mean they'll make $1 billion every time.
Most likely. Or come close. I think once the backlash of Last Jedi is washed away, and it's going to be different. I think you're going to have to do a good movie. I think Star Wars has cashed in its goodwill chips to where it's like, okay, just because it's Star Wars, we're not, you know, and I think we've touched on it before on the previous episode, where Star Wars doesn't have necessarily the name brand appeal that it had to our generation, because now you have Harry Potter, you have Marvel movies, you have all these other franchises, whereas when we were growing up, it was Star Wars and then Indiana Jones, and that was about it.
Yeah, I think the sad thing for me, and of course, you can take or leave some of the new Star Wars movies, but I think it is kind of weird to see Marvel supplant Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about it, Star Wars is like hallowed ground for me. It always has been, but the numbers bear out that Marvel is just dominating pop culture consciousness. And their level of quality, and we talk about batting average sometimes, or at least I do, in terms of quality, is so much higher than, you know, than almost everything else that studios are putting out. I mean, look at James Bond movies. Those things are way up and down, like, in terms of quality. There's some you take or leave. Marvel movies are generally worth watching at least once. Except for Captain Marvel, sorry. But I think with Star Wars, it's lost its luster and its legendary status. Not with me, being a biased fanboy since I was 7 years old, seeing it in the movie theater, 1977. But the what I saw at Star Wars Celebration, I think it is important to bring it back to that, is that the fans are healing. Some trolls and some people like you that have honest disagreements with the direction that Disney went into from Force Awakens on, they're starting to go, oh, JJ's coming back. I like that new trailer. Oh, The Mandalorian looks pretty cool. If they can string together a couple things that people generally like, I think it'll be back to, like, must-see entertainment. Star Wars still commands a level of respect, though, that only Marvel is on. But I think Marvel has beaten it at this point, which is kind of weird, but I'm a winner as a pop culture fan, so.
Good point. Last question, and I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Do it.
Not counting, obviously, the ones we've talked about, is there a property that you would like to see a cinematic universe created for?
Or recreated?
Or recreated.
You know, I'm seeing The Matrix outdoors because here in Los Angeles, outdoor movie season is starting. But I want to see The Matrix because it was such a game changer. You put it as an overrated movie, so this is going to drive you nuts. Two and three weren't that good. I want to see them. I think the Wachowskis are underrated. They have a lot of talent. I want to see. It's so fascinating what they did with that first movie. I want to see more of those.
I did see a headline. I can't remember who it was that said it, but said the Wachowskis are working on revamping The Matrix.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. But I didn't read the article because, yeah, The Matrix is not a franchise that I am interested in. But apparently, possibly, there could be some more Matrix in the future.
What about you? Would it be Chuck Norris and Delta Force? Or what would you like to see it keep going?
Well, you know, I would like to see the Breaking movies get updated.
I would, too.
That would be amazing. I guess what they did was Step Up. I guess you could say that they were. Which, side tangent, had a conversation at work today, or overheard a conversation that said Channing Tatum is this generation's Patrick Swayze.
I'm not to think about that. I'm not sure. He's not your conventional leading man, but I like him in movies. I think he's pretty good.
And they can both dance. So
yeah, they're talented.
Yeah. You know, I think for me, they tried doing this a few years ago, and it didn't really stick. But I enjoyed both films that they made. I want to see the Muppets come back. I love the Muppets.
Wow. That'd be cool. I love the Muppets too.
Yeah,
and they got it right with that first one. I don't know what happened with the next one.
I just, you know, kind of like with Star Wars, I think the Muppets' time hasn't passed, but it's just not as when you have CGI everything now, the Muppets just don't hold the same place. For kids, but yeah. And then I believe Netflix is revamping Animaniacs, so I wouldn't mind seeing an Animaniacs whole Pinky and the Brain, Good Feathers.
That'd be cool. Yeah, Netflix is really playing on nostalgia right now.
Yeah. Well, it sells.
Yeah. It's
the people that have the money to spend are very much into nostalgia.
Yep, for sure.
As I can attest, because that is my wheelhouse, and I would rather...
I live in it. I pay rent.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Positive Cynicism. Let us know what you think of these cinematic universes and what you want to see. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. Don't forget, there is also the Positive Cynicism Facebook page. You can check that out. And jitterymonkey.com. But as always, question everything. Do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.